Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Mesh Seibel, founder of drseibel.com, drseibel.com. Today we're going to have a discussion about something that's incredibly important, and that is sexual dysfunction or problems with your sex life, and really, what are some things that you can do to really change it and make a difference so that you can have a satisfying and gratifying sexual life and a terrific relationship with your partner. Now, today we're going to be talking with Dr. Jen Landa, and Dr. Landa is the Chief Medical Officer of BodyLogic MD, and she's called the Sexpert MD, and I am thrilled to have her with us. So welcome, Dr. Jen.
Thanks so much, Dr. Seibel. Great to talk to you.
Likewise. You know, I know that you have an enormous amount of experience with women's sexual health and women's sexual dysfunction when things are not so healthy. So how big a problem is this in the United States?
You know, it's a huge problem. And some of the studies quote that up to 43% of women, and these are, we're talking about not necessarily even menopausal women, about 43% of women overall report sexual problems and sexual issues of some kind. Mm-hmm. And the greatest majority of those would be issues with sexual desire. Uh-huh. But what's really amazing, as you're talking about the transition into perimenopause and menopause, once you get into those stages, believe it or not, over 80% of women report having some sort of sexual issues at least sometime.
So 4 out of 5 women are going to have at least occasionally a problem with sexual dysfunction. That's darn near everybody.
pretty much near everybody. And it affects, like you said, everybody because it's a couple's issue. So we're not only talking to women, we're talking to the men who love them.
Exactly. And, you know, when people come in, I know that one of the things that I think that happens with a sexual problem, it's very personal, it's very embarrassing, it's very intimate. People don't like to talk about it. They don't want to tell anybody because, A, they don't think there's anything that can be done, and B, it's so awkward to talk about it that they can't imagine that anybody else has this problem, even though 4 out of 5 of their girlfriends are going to be having the same kind of thing. So I know that you have put together a system to help bring back sex drive. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, you're so right when you say that that people are afraid to talk about it and people are uncomfortable about talking about it. And that discomfort extends not only to our patients, but also to doctors themselves. Mm-hmm. For me, this whole idea and my whole, what I call my passion for passion, really grew out of a very personal experience in my life. Mm-hmm. When I was about 28 years old, I lost my libido. Or I should say, I realized my libido was lost and had gone. You know, it takes time for women usually to even realize that this is a problem. It kind of sneaks up on you. You know, at first you just stop initiating sex. And then eventually come the excuses, oh, I'm too tired, I have a headache, things like that. Mm-hmm. And for my husband and I, it became like the elephant in the room. You know, it became this thing that we weren't talking about. So another place that people aren't talking about it is between themselves as a couple. Because when I ask my patients a lot of times when they come in and I ask them, you know, so what's going on with your libido, what's going on with your sex drive, what's going on with your sex life, a lot of them will tell me, and this is pretty surprising maybe to some people listening, but a lot of them will tell me, I'm not really having sex, or I'm only having sex a couple of times a year or something like that. And they know that that is not maybe optimal for their relationship, but, you know, then I'll ask them, so how does your partner feel about this? And usually they look at me kind of aghast, like, ooh, you know, I really don't know. We don't talk about it.
So it's falling off.
Again,
it's like mm-hmm. falling off their radar, and yet they, as you say, the elephant in the bedroom, as it is in this case, is really
right.
They aren't communicating with each other about the most obvious personal intimate part of their relationship, and that is their sexual intimacy with each other.
You're so right. And, you know, so I've been through that experience myself as to kind of trying to figure out what to do about it. Because once I figured out really what was going on for me, that I felt like no sex drive at all. My husband, it kind of came to a head when my husband and I went on a vacation. And vacations were always the time where we, you know, we had the time to relax. We weren't working a zillion hours a week and having so many other things to tend to. So vacations were a time where we would usually, you know, we joked around and said, we used to do, you know, all we used to do was eat, sleep, and have sex and do it again. And it was a lot of fun.
Not a bad cycle.
And, not a bad cycle, but on this particular vacation, it was becoming, that elephant was becoming bigger and bigger until I finally said to myself, you know, if I think about it, I really don't feel like I care if I ever have sex again. And that was when I realized I really had to talk to my husband about it. And I sat him down and I talked to him about it. And as you might imagine, he wasn't very thrilled. And he had some reactions, which even surprised me. He really felt like this was about me not being attracted to him or not loving him anymore. So it's really interesting for women to get a perspective of what men feel, because men really communicate a lot of love and intimacy through sex. And of course, it's that never-ending cycle and kind of conundrum that we have, that women need to have emotional intimacy to have sex, and men tend to generate emotional intimacy from having sex. So we wind up in sort of this stalemate sometimes when we're not having sex,
so
as far as the emotional intimacy goes.
So your personal or within yourself feelings of less desire were in fact interpreted by your husband as not your internal problems or issues or concerns, but rather finding him less attractive or just someone you were no longer interested in, and he was looking at it very personally, when in fact it was your personal internal thing and it wasn't the case at all.
You're absolutely right. But I was crystal clear on that. You know, I love my husband. I loved him then. I was, you know, attracted to him as I was attracted to anybody. My problem was I didn't feel like having sex with anybody. I just didn't feel sexual anymore. And so, like you said about not knowing where to turn or where to bring it up, I feel like I had it worse than most people, because I was at the end of my OBGYN residency. So here I was positioned to become a women's health expert and have patients come to see me with the very same problems that I was experiencing. And I sat and I thought about how I was going to resolve this problem or who I was going to talk to about it. And I did not recall a single professor or doctor that I looked up to during my residency talking about women's sexuality and how to bring it back if it was gone.
It's often not discussed. You know, it's often not a course in medical school with all of the genetic things and the infection things and the surgery things and the labor and delivery things. The sexual part of life is sometimes a smaller percentage of what's ever conveyed. And you're quite right. Not every doctor is comfortable talking about it.
And there's been a bunch of studies lately that have come out that talk about how few OBGYNs actually do bring up sexuality with their patients, because most of them haven't been trained to take care of the problem. So the worst part is, even if you did get up the nerve to go into your OBGYN and to bring up the problem, a lot of them just look at you and say, that's just the way it is. This is just what happens as we age. You've got to accept it. And I'm here to tell you that nothing could be further from the truth. So it's taken me 15 years of lots of additional medical study. I took a fellowship in an area called integrative medicine and learned a lot more about hormones, including bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and lifestyle medicine, preventive medicine, and integrative medicine. And my own experiences have kind of taken all of that and put it together into, like you were talking about, programs that I've developed online for women who are suffering with what I was suffering with, low sex drive, sexual problems, sexual difficulties. And I've also created a training program for physicians. I do a sexual health certification course for physicians now, because I felt that there was this huge lack in doctors being trained in this area.
Mm-hmm.
So the online programs that you were asking me about, I've developed several different online programs, and one of them is a 6-week course for women who have low sex drive or for couples to do together even, because I think it's great when you get the partner involved so they really can see, like, just like we were talking about with my own experience and my husband, so guys can see that it's not necessarily them, and it's not necessarily as personal as they're taking it, but their partner has a problem and many times wants to really get some help fixing that problem.
So is this what you call harsh? Is this the system that you developed that you call by an acronym called HARSH, H-A-R-S-H?
Well, yeah, HARSH is kind of the framework. The name of the program is Rewire Your Desire. So I want to teach women to rewire their desire, and I do it by teaching them about HARSH. Like you said, that's an acronym, because losing your sex drive is harsh. And the acronym stands for, H stands for habits, A for attitude, R for relationships, S for stress, and H for hormones.
Mm-hmm. So that's,
I'm sure you want me to go into each of
those. Absolutely. H for habits.
Detail.
H for habits.
H for habits. So what am I talking about when I'm talking about these habits? So what I'm talking about really is what I like to call the pro-libido lifestyle. So by changing our habits, we can make ourselves feel sexier. So what do I mean? So habits are very automatic things, right? Every day we go throughout life, and most of what we do in life is governed by habit. For example, you don't think about which leg of your pants you pull on first. You just do it. You don't think about tying your shoe. You just do it. And there's so many things that we do every day throughout our day that are habits that may be working against us for our sex drive, whereas we can change those into habits that would be more pro-libido.
What would be a couple examples of those?
Well, I can't help but mention, first off, nutrition, because I think what we eat, we are what we eat, is the old expression, and it couldn't be more true. So if we are eating fast food, processed food, high-sugar food, no matter, you know, junk in, junk out, if we eat that kind of food, we're going to feel basically crappy, right? And if we feel crappy, we don't want to have sex. We're not interested in sex.
So it'd be less energy in general in your life.
I think energy is a really big driver of sex drive for most women. Most women feel like they don't have enough energy just to get through their day, let alone to have sex at the end of the day. It's like, leave me alone. I just want to get in bed, watch Dancing with the Stars or some reality show, zone out, and pass off to sleep. And that's about all I have energy for. So, yes, nutrition and energy are inextricably linked. And believe it or not, there are certain ways that we can eat even that tune up our hormones, that improve our hormone balance. And, of course, hormones is one of the things we're going to talk about in a little while. But so eating whole nutritious foods, eating lots of lean protein, because lean protein helps us build muscle, helps us lose fat, it helps us. And, of course, just doing things like that, eating fruits and vegetables, and staying away from processed foods, just doing that, we're going to drop a few pounds. And just dropping a few pounds is going to make us feel better about how we feel and about up our sexy quotient, so to speak.
So we're going
so
to
that's
be.
That's nutrition.
So you're going to. Mm-hmm. One of the major habits is to eat better, get rid of the junk food, get some whole nutritious food, some proteins, some fruits and vegetables. And really, what you're talking about right now is you're going to try and get rid of that kind of blahs from your life by eating healthier. You're going to get more energy in your life. You're going to lose a few pounds, which is going to make you feel better and increase your self-esteem, your personal image of yourself. And that's going to be one of the ways you're going to create new habits that are going to make you increase your sexy quotient.
Definitely. And then I can't, of course, go without mentioning exercise. Mm-hmm. But I want to mention a particular kind of exercise, because I think a lot of us get roped into the whole idea of being cardio queens. You know, I walk 5 miles a day. I don't understand why it's not doing anything for me. Or I run miles and miles and miles. And I've done this personally. I did some half marathons in my time and some triathlons. And what I find, though, with the endurance exercise is the endurance exercises, you know, it's a long, long period of time that you're putting the body under this kind of intense stress. And sometimes that really doesn't work in our favor, because one of the things that long bouts of cardio can do is can break down muscle. So instead, what I really recommend for people to do is something called burst training. And burst training involves basically the way you do it with any exercise you really choose. It could be like a walk run, it could be bicycling, it could be rowing, it could be anything really. Do it intensely as hard as you possibly can for a minute, and then for 2 minutes do what we call active rest. So if you were running, then you would, you know, slow to a slow jog or a fast walk for 2 minutes, and then do it again, 1 minute as hard as you possibly can, and then 2 minutes of active rest, and repeat that for about 5 to 6 cycles. And that's what they call burst training. And in studies, burst training has been shown to increase testosterone levels. So it's a natural way to fire up your own testosterone. So I always recommend to people, before your next date night, schedule a burst training workout and see how much more the fireworks can spark.
Well, that's interesting. So you're going to get people to really get their body metabolism working better, and you're going to get them to tone up, and you're going to get them now they're going to be using their burst control instead of their birth control. Use your burst control so you can need your birth control.
That's a good one, Mitch. I like that. So another thing that I think is a really important habit for women to adopt is the habit of what I call tuning in. And I'm talking about tuning into your senses, like taste, touch, smell, sight, sound, all of that. So you know how some of us are audio learners or visual learners,
right?
You know, kinesthetic learners. Well, so you take that same propensity to be like an auditory learner, let's say, that tends to mean that, you know, your sense of hearing is the sense that is more acute for you. So what you can do, we're getting this sensory information fed to us all day long. Certain sensory information is going to help us spark up our desire. So you have to figure out which type of person you are, and I have in my program some quizzes to help people try to figure out whether they're more visual, auditory, olfactory, meaning smell, sense of smell. So like for me, for instance, I am very auditory, so whenever I want to get myself in a sexier mood, or of course my husband knows this now too, there's a certain type of music called chill out music or lounge music. And that kind of music just kind of slows me down, mellows me out, and kind of puts me into that sexy frame of mind. And then, of course, you come to associate it, if you usually play that music when you're having sex, then you start to make that association kind of like a Pavlovian dog, right? You start to make those associations.
That's sort of what I do with the health rock, is to use music to take people to a certain place. And that's what you're doing, is telling people to tune in to music that they associate in their brains with an experience that is more sexy and takes them to the right kind of place.
Exactly. And it can be other things too. Like for some people, they're very smell oriented. So make sure to buy your husband a cologne that you think is really sexy on him, so that he knows when he wants to, you know, when he wants to get a little frisky, to put on that cologne, so you get that great sensory smell spark, you know, because so many of us have sensory experiences all day long. Like an example I use is we eat a gourmet meal, beautiful meal, but how much do we really pay attention to what it looks like, what it smells like, what it feels like on our tongue, or even what it tastes like?
That's being mindful.
We're wrapped up. Yes, exactly. Being mindful. Mindfulness is a huge part. It's another huge habit that you have to get into to improve sexuality. Being mindful, being present in the moment.
You're creating your own pheromones, if you will, the smells that turn you on. You're creating the sounds that turn you on. You're really creating an environment that is sensual by your own personal design.
Exactly.
Create your own sensual experience.
Yes, so it's exactly designed for you.
That sounds pretty good.
Great. Well, so we should get on to some of the rest of them, because
yes.
I don't want to run out of time.
Yes.
So attitude. 98% of sex is in the brain, right?
That's the organ that matters.
That's right. So we have to rewire our brain for sex. So one simple, easy tip that, believe it or not, people would never think about, but it actually works and it's been proven in scientific studies. So just thinking about sex actually makes us sexier. People who think about sex more often have more sex, and their levels of desire hormones like testosterone are actually higher. So it's not natural necessarily for people who have low desire. So what I tell them to do is, if they keep a list, like a to-do list, to actually write the word sex on the list or their partner's name or a code word if they're afraid that somebody else is going to be seeing their list, but something that's going to remind them to think about sex and think about sexy thoughts a few times a day. And I tell them, okay, at first it might be a little awkward or not what you're used to, but that's the whole idea. You've got to do what I call fake it till you make it. So fake it at first and just remind yourself to be thinking about it. And sooner or later, those thoughts will start to flow more naturally, especially if you associate them with pleasurable sexual experiences that you remember having in the past.
So what you're doing here is
part of it.
You're building in another way, you're building in habits, you're building in experiences that are associated with sex in reminding yourself about it so that it's part of your consciousness, part of what you think about. And you're really making time to think about it and not crowding out intimate thoughts by all the work and have to do and should do and didn't do's and all those other things that people use as real downers of libido.
Yeah. You know, so many of us let ourself and our personal care fall to the very bottom of the priority list. And sex is right along with all of those because sex has so many wonderful benefits for us personally. But we too often, especially women, we're all running around taking care of everybody else and not taking care of ourselves. And that's not sexy.
No, and you're giving a wonderful framework here. So we've talked about habits. We've talked about attitudes. And what about relationships?
The R part of harsh relationships. You know, too often I see in my practice, people come in and they tell me, they tell me they have a libido problem, sexuality problem, and I ask them how their relationship. And so very simply they answer me, oh, it's good, fine, no problem. And then when we start talking in a little bit more detail, I had a patient just yesterday, the same idea. She's got a lot of stuff going on, but low libido is definitely on the list. And the last two times she saw me, she sat down, and the very first thing she said when I said, so what's going on? She said, well, my husband just sold our house. And then this time, that was a couple of months ago. And then this time she came in and she said, well, now we've moved into that house that my husband made us move into. And now it needs all kinds of renovations. So I'm so stressed about this and that and that. And this was a woman who said she's happily married initially when we started talking about her issues. And I said, you know, as I'm listening to you, I can't help but hear, it sounds like maybe some resentment built up towards your partner. And she said, well, you know, he can be a very difficult man. And we started to talk in detail, and I've had so many patients who kind of, it's almost like a denial. It's like a cognitive dissonance. You know, they think they're in a happy relationship, but then when they think about it, they're harboring a lot of resentment toward the partner. I think resentment is the word that I hear over and over and over with women if we really start to dissect things. And this resentment will certainly dampen your libido because if the person you're trying to have sex with is this guy who you resent, that's really not a libido, an aphrodisiac, you know? So you're really going to have to start to work on those issues.
It's still an R.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm saying it's still an R. It's a relationship resentment that is really what happens.
Right, it's another R. You're absolutely right. And you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say is that, so once again, You're asking a person whose libido is lost to say, what is in your brain? What's going on in your brain, your sex organ that you've got to turn on in order to have a turned on relationship and sexual relationship? What is it that's crowding it out? And you're giving them a tool to think about the person they want to have sex with. And if it's one where they're really angry, resentful, that's not going to be conducive to being amorous.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if that's the issue in your case, if this is kind of ringing true to you, one of the best statements that I've ever heard in that pertaining to this is when self-care is low, resentment is high. So a lot of times the resentment we're feeling, we actually need to kind of examine our own part in that. And too many times, it's that we're running around doing everything for everyone else, including our partner. And we're doing all kinds of things because we think that person needs those things to be done. when in fact we would probably be better served if we stopped running around doing all of those things and started taking a little bit better care of ourselves, our resentment would decrease a little bit, and we would actually become much more pleasant people to be around, and our sexy quotient might go up a little bit, because when we're not feeling resentful and angry, and we're feeling like this other person is, you know, we would feel like they're a much more attractive person to be around if we're not resenting them. And sometimes the cause of the resentment is all the stuff that we're running around doing and not taking good enough care of ourselves.
And this is all giving the person, too. This gives a woman time to get her attitudes and her sexy thoughts time. It's like a spark that can kindle a little bit because the resentment's gone. And those habits that are causing her to feel better, like eating well, exercising well, that burst training that you talked about, all of those things have a chance to have an impact and now have a place to expand into and really ignite those sparks that she's thinking about.
Exactly. Very, very important, I think. And, you know, of course, sometimes there are relationship problems that can't be overcome just by talking and communication. So sometimes a counselor, a couple of sessions with a counselor can be extremely valuable. So that kind of slides us right into the stress topic. That's
right.
The S in harsh. So stress, I find, is probably the biggest sex killer I see when I look at patients and people that I meet who have sexual issues. And stress works that way for so many different reasons. You know, when we're stressed out, number one, we're tired, so that impacts the energy. When we're stressed, we tend to be some of the things that we've already been saying. You know, our self-care tends to be low, our resentment of everybody and everything tends to be high. And, you know, we're walking around kind of like this boiling pot. And what it does to your hormone levels. So stress increases the hormone cortisol, and cortisol, which we can talk a little bit more about next when we talk about hormones, but that stress hormone, that can kill the way that testosterone works in our body. So we really have to get hold of the stress part, to the stress piece, to spark up those romantic flames. And, you know, looking back on it, stress was definitely a big part of the reason for the decrease in sexuality in my relationship in my life. I was only 28 years old when people, which is not a time that people associate with losing your libido usually, and I was only married even a couple of years, but I was working 80 to 100 hours a week as an OBGYN resident.
So very
stressful.
Talk
about stress. Yeah, talk about stress and killing your hormones. That was a big, big part of it. And I see it every day in my patients. You know, we're all living with these high, high stress levels nowadays. And most people, when I ask them, what are you doing to alleviate stress? They look at me and they say nothing.
Yeah, they're waiting for it to go away, you know, and it doesn't necessarily go away passively. You have to sometimes actively work on stress to make it go away. And stress lowers your immune system. It makes you more susceptible to infections and illnesses. It's a very, very powerful thing that's responsible for up to 85% of all primary care visits. I mean, it leads to disease. So how do you tell people to work on it?
So I think one of the most important things to do is what we were talking about before, to learn to be more mindful, to learn to be more present in the moment. One of my favorite books is a book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And he talks all about being in the now, because when we live in the past, we tend to be more depressed. And when we live in the future, he says, we tend to be more anxious. And I find that too many of my patients spend too much time living either in the past or the future and not enough just being in the moment. And that's all about, that's what meditation is all about. And it's kind of called, one way I've heard it expressed that I love is to look for the space between your thoughts. And let that space expand. And that's what we should be trying to do when we meditate. Or I love the idea of going online. I always recommend this to people, to go online, Google the words guided meditation. There are tons and tons of free guided meditations out there, little short videos, 5-10 minutes, plug your headphones into your laptop and let somebody sort of take you on a little stress-relieving trip. You know, it's somebody guides you through a walk on the beach and telling you to breathe in and out, and just suspend all of your busy mind chatter for a few minutes And just doing that for a few minutes each day, like you were saying, Dr. Seibel, has so many benefits for your health. You know, they've shown that stress can cause so many bad things, but they've shown that this kind of guided meditation and meditation in general can lower blood pressure, the risk of heart disease, improve cancers, I mean, all kinds of things.
Very, very powerful.
Yeah, and what it can do for sexuality, you see, this is what I love. I think people need to practice mindfulness and meditation in their everyday life, and then you can translate that so nicely to the bedroom. Because too many of us have had the experience of trying to have sex, and then you've got these thoughts floating in and out of your head that you know should not be there. For me, it'll be like, oh my gosh, I got to remember to put the soccer cleats in my kid's bag for tomorrow morning. Or, you know, I forgot, darn it, I forgot to get milk for cereal in the morning, or whatever it is, you know. And you know that's not what you should be or want to be thinking about. And that takes practice. It takes practice to shut off those that mind chatter. And so that practice will reduce our stress levels and cause us to be able to be more present in the moment when we're having sex, which will help us be more sexual and enjoy sex more, so we want to have more sex.
It's really interesting. People talk about mindful eating, but mindful sexual experiences are not as often talked about. I'm glad to hear you bring that up, because really and truly, if you think about it, if you ponder just the caress or the touch without even having intercourse or without having the sexual act, all of the buildup that comes to it, all of the foreplay that is the arousal part of that, really has a chance to be incredibly stimulating and positive and add and enhance the whole experience, so that the whole time you're there, it's mindful and pleasurable.
Definitely. Definitely. And so I guess talking about stress and cortisol brings us to hormones.
Right.
So there are lots of hormones, as you know, that we kind of can delve into with sexuality. I have another acronym here. So real quick, I'll tell you, the acronym is PROTECT, protect your hormones. So PR is for progesterone, O for oxytocin, P for thyroid, E for estrogen, C for cortisol, and the last T for testosterone. So that's a lot of different hormones that we have to kind of balance and boost to get our sexuality going and get it in order. And we've already talked about some things, a lot of different lifestyle changes that we can make that bring our hormones into better balance. So do you have any favorites you want to talk about, Dr. Seibel?
Well, what I'd like to do, just even in a sentence or two, about mm-hmm. these, since we've talked about these, because people may know about estrogen and progesterone, at least in terms of reproduction, or maybe in terms of menopause, in terms of hormone replacement. But maybe we could just say, just quickly, like progesterone, what to do here, how do you use it, or who needs it?
So a lot of women really do need progesterone, because progesterone, classically, the scientific research tells us that progesterone starts to go down in the early 30s, but I see it all the time, even in women in their 20s. Because of all this stress that we have, it decreases our ability to make other hormones, and one of the biggest ones is progesterone. And progesterone is a woman's calming hormone. And too many women tell me that when they lose their progesterone, they get anxious, they can't sleep, they're irritable, they're moody, they get breast tenderness, bloating, things like that. So a lot of those things are signs that you might need progesterone. And actually, I have a hormone evaluation test that people can take if they... Now, I don't have a link prepared for you, I just realized, but I would love to give you one to a hormone evaluation I have, so people can figure out which hormones are the ones that might be the problem for them. So
well,
maybe you can post it with the interview later. But
yeah, send it to me and I'll add it in.
Okay, great. Progesterone. So the progesterone, though, women who have those symptoms that we were just talking about, and there are really so many more, might be good candidates for progesterone therapy. So you were asking me, you know, how is it given? Progesterone can be given in the oral form, like as a capsule, or it can be used in a cream form. And you can't even get cream progesterone over the counter, but I do caution about that, because sometimes people wind up wildly overdosing themselves or even underdosing themselves. So I would really recommend that they find a hormone specialist to work with if they're going to engage in hormone treatment. But so many women do benefit in so many different ways from progesterone, including sexuality. There is definitely some research that shows us that progesterone levels, higher progesterone levels, help with sexuality.
And this is progesterone, not one of the progestins, a substance that's similar to progesterone, like a medroxyprogesterone, one of the synthetic ones. But we're talking about bioidentical ones that are exactly what the body makes.
Oh, I'm so glad you reminded me about that. Because, so what was the other reason that I had no sex drive at 28? It was the birth control pill. That was a big, big part of it. And the artificial form of progesterone, known as progestins, which what you were talking about, medroxyprogesterone acetate or MPA, is one of those. Those progestins can cause so many different side effects in women. And progestins are found in pretty much almost every birth control pill on the market and a lot of the classic hormone replacement medications on the market. So yes, you want to be sure you're getting bioidentical progesterone, which is progesterone that's the same exact progesterone as what's in your body, and not the artificial form called progestin.
Now, in the interest of time, I want to make sure we move on, because I want to conclude and say that the progestin, some of those artificial ones can actually be anti-estrogens, and that just completely undoes everything good that estrogen can do for a woman's body.
So, and anti-testosterone.
And anti-testosterone, right. Now,
very much so.
Now, the oxytocin, that's one that is very important in having a baby, because it pushes the baby out, but a lot of women may not know about that hormone. So maybe you just very briefly tell us about it.
Sure. Well, oxytocin is the cuddle hormone or the love hormone, it's known as, because we tend to make oxytocin just by cuddling. And oxytocin, like you said, it is the hormone that helps us push a baby out, but it's also the hormone that gets released when we have sexual experiences and especially when we have orgasm. And it produces a relaxing, calming effect that has amazing benefits on people. So, and also what oxytocin does that I love is it decreases the orgasm threshold. So firing up your oxytocin can actually make it easier to have an orgasm and even multiple orgasms for some women.
So how does that happen?
Firing up your oxytocin, the good news is it's really easy to do. So it's called the cuddle hormone because it gets produced when we cuddle. So lying naked skin to skin, giving a massage is an excellent way to raise oxytocin. And kissing. So instead of just like the peck on the cheek at the door when your hubby or your wife comes in the door, start like even just a 10 full seconds. 10 full seconds of making out will start that oxytocin flowing. And other ways to make oxytocin flowing, remember all those tips that we talked about tuning into your senses?
Right.
Well, guess what? Sensual experiences help raise oxytocin. So I had a patient, for example, she would make an oxytocin fest in her household. She figured out what senses were important to her and which ones were important to her husband. And so what she would do is she knew that visual was really big for him. So she'd always make sure she looked really cute when she came home. And smell, sense of smell was really important to him. And she was a great cook. She's Italian. She loves to cook. She says, of course, I love to cook with garlic. Luckily, he loves the smell of garlic. So he comes in the house. It smells great. She looks great. And so he wraps her in his arms and gives her compliments. And guess what? It turns out what fires up her oxytocin is getting compliments and getting touched. So she entices him to give her the touching that she wants and needs, and he gives her the compliments that she wants, and off they go. They've got an oxytocin fest.
Wow, that's wonderful. So that, you know, this is all part of the mindfulness. This is all builds on itself, and in every area, the more of this that gets done, the more it's impacting at multiple layers. Well, I want to continue on because I want to talk about the last part of these, the thyroid, estrogen, cortisol, and testosterone, just briefly. So thyroid.
So thyroid. Thyroid is the great regulator in the body. It basically regulates everything. And thyroid does contribute to sexuality. So when people's thyroid hormones are out of balance, and you can have your thyroid can be too low or too high, and either one can affect your sexuality. So there are pretty simple tests that your doctor can run to make sure that your thyroid is not out of order. I would encourage, though, to make sure that your doctor runs a free T3. And if your free T3 is not in the optimal zone, in addition to your TSH, which is what they normally measure, then you might benefit from some thyroid hormone.
That's
and
a wonderful
then estrogen.
Tip. Mm-hmm.
Estrogen, you said you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Estrogen, I'm sure you talk about this a lot, Dr. Seibel,
yes,
because
indeed.
Estrogen is so important in so many different ways. But I think the thing that I want to highlight is the vaginal dryness. You know, so many women come to my office and they tell me, when I went into menopause, I knew I was going to, you know, maybe have trouble sleeping, have hot flushes, maybe get a little bitchy, but I had no idea that my vagina was just going to dry up and shrink up and shrivel, and I wasn't going to be able to have sex because it hurts too much. And that's where I think vaginal estrogen is so important for women and can be used in ways that are so much more convenient than what's normally prescribed. Because you and I know as gynecologists, what they offer us to give to women, it's terrible. They it's a humongous glob of cream to be put in with this applicator and everything, like you have an infection or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is that estrogen, bioidentical estrogens, estrogens that are exactly the same as what's in your body, like estradiol and estriol, can be made into very small concentrations by a compounding pharmacist into just as much as you really need and want. And what I think is a really important tip is don't inject the estrogen deep inside the vagina, because that's not really where you need it. Where you really need it is at the vaginal opening, the
yeah.
clitoris, the vulva, the urethra even, for your urinary health. All of those tissues are super sensitive to estrogen. And when we lose estrogen in menopause, those tissues shrivel and shrink up. But when you give them estrogen, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Within, as you know, within 4 to 6 weeks, women say, I can't believe it. My vagina's just plumped back up again. The tissues are strong again. They don't tear. They don't hurt. I don't hurt anymore. Sex is pleasurable again.
Yeah, because the outer part is when your baby is an embryo, it comes, the outer third comes from a different part than the inner third. And that outer third is the part that really narrows when women start to lose estrogen and starts to create the tenderness and pain that comes in association with having vaginal atrophy is what it's called, but really just thinning of the tissues and narrowing of the tissues so that penetration is uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So,
and then cortisol. So cortisol we've talked a little bit about already when we talked about stress. And cortisol is that hormone that goes up when we're stressed, and it interferes with the way all of our other hormones work. So it's really important to get hold of our stress, to get hold of cortisol. So we talked a little bit about mindfulness and meditation, but also, you know, other things like yoga, tai chi, qigong, massage, all kinds of other things can help us reduce our cortisol. And another thing that I think is really important is balancing our blood sugar is a really important key to keeping cortisol under control. Because what people don't realize is that cortisol is the stress hormone, but it's not just emotional stress. It's also physical stress. And one of the most common physical stresses people endure is the fluctuation of their blood sugar all day long,
mm-hmm.
especially if they eat high sugar foods. And those high sugar foods might be sugar that's hiding in foods, like in breads, pasta, potatoes, rice. Eating all those types of foods will send your blood sugar up very high, but then it will crash down low. And when the blood sugar crashes down low, the body views that as a stress. And so you're actually boosting this cortisol hormone when you, in fact, you really don't need to at all. So that's such an avoidable stressor that I really want to see people avoid. And
that's a good point.
And the other thing is, I really want people to, anybody who's listening, I want them to take this call as an opportunity to evaluate the stressors in their lives. Look at the stress that they might be experiencing and really look at different situations that may have become, like I talked about before, may have become habits. Things that you do that are habits that really may increase your stress, and learn to cut them out. Like I had one lady who, she would drive around all the time listening to the talk radio, and she would listen to the economic news and the political news, and she would get so angry, she'd be slamming the steering wheel and yelling at the people.
Understandably.
And can you imagine understandably, right? But can you imagine what's happening to her cortisol? And I asked her what would happen if she just shut that off and started listening to spa radio.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't know, but I'll try it. And she was amazed at the reduction in her stress levels when she stopped tuning into that. So that's just an example.
Cutting out the negative people in your life, just taking that.
Exactly.
Not listening to the news before you go to bed when it's right before you go to sleep, and that's all gets on your mind is all the financial stuff and the storm in New Jersey and all the things that are going on. Tune that stuff out, and you eliminate the stimulus for the stresses, creating the cortisol, which stresses you, and also the blood sugar, which you talked about, because cortisol is supposed to, when we get stressed, it's, you know, when we were back in the cave days, we were needing to eat, so we would get sugar up. And you're making a very good point, bringing it into the current time and what it's doing to people. That's very negative.
Yeah, absolutely.
And finally, testosterone, which is, you know, the male hormone, so to speak, but still very important for women also.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people don't realize, but women have testosterone, too. We have a tenth the amount of testosterone that men do, but it's very, very important to our functioning because testosterone, it's the hormone of desire, absolutely, but it's also a hormone that helps with energy, memory, mood, bone strength, muscle strength. So it's got so many great benefits for us. And testosterone tends to go down, number one, like I said, when people are stressed. That's very common. Number two, on the birth control pill, that's a big place where testosterone goes down. So I definitely want people to know about that. And testosterone just goes down as we age. Believe it or not, this is one of the hormones that goes down at a younger age than most of our other hormones. You know, we all know about menopause at the age of 50, but testosterone starts to go down after it peaks at around age 18. And the biggest drop that we experience in testosterone is from the age of 18 to 34.
Wow. So that's a pretty formative time, and a time when women would think they were at their peak of testosterone.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? But it really, we suffer the biggest decline from 18 to 34, and thereafter it just steadily declines. And testosterone therapy, treating women with testosterone, I do a lot of this in my practice because it can be extremely beneficial in all of those ways that we mentioned, including, of course, sexual desire and sexual responsiveness, and ability to orgasm and ability to lubricate the vagina. And all of those great things tend to stem from testosterone. And so if you try all of the natural ways to boost testosterone, we've talked about some of them, reducing your sugar, doing burst training, doing meditation, and all of those things. And if all those things don't work, you might want to consult a hormone specialist to prescribe some testosterone for you, because testosterone can work very, very well.
Do you measure testosterone in the patients you see?
I do, absolutely, yes. I measure testosterone at the baseline to see if the testosterone is relatively low. Now, I don't just accept quote-unquote normal range, okay? There's a pretty broad spectrum of the normal range, and the normal range takes into account women from 18 to 80.
Right.
And like I just explained to you, the levels would be very, very different in an 18-year-old woman versus an 80-year-old woman.
Absolutely.
And even in my 50- and 60-year-old patients, they tell me, well, I don't want the testosterone of what's average for 50 or 60. I want to be optimal. I want to be what you would see in an 18- or 20-year-old. And that's what I look at doing with a lot of my patients, into bringing their hormones into what would be an optimal level for a younger woman. And often their symptoms sort of react the same way. They tell me, wow, I haven't felt this way since I was 20 years old.
Well, you know, and so you basically offer a tremendous overview of what happens when women come in with a sexual issue, a problem where a decreased libido is affecting their sex life. But as you have revealed it, as you have unraveled it, you're really talking about saying in many ways that if your sex life is bad, there's a good possibility that many parameters are also bad, and it's like a weather vane for your whole life. And in fact, that it could be that the habits that you have, for the foods that you eat, for the exercise that you have or don't have, for the mindfulness in your life are missing. It could be that your attitudes, you're not thinking about sex and taking time to really incorporate it in your day, that your relationships may have some resentment in it. In fact, that you're really not being aware of the fact that there's some things that need to be hashed out, talked about with your partner, because those things are making you feel resentment that's really affecting your libido and All of this leads to stress, which is a tremendous sex killer in so many different ways. And you talked about hormones, for which you provided first the acronym HARSH for the ones we talked about, habits, attitudes, relationships, stress, and hormones. And then you talked about the hormones, which was PROTECT, which was progesterone, oxytocin, thyroid, estrogen, cortisol, and testosterone. So you really gave an enormously helpful overview of really, I think, something that 80% of women are going to experience at some point in their life, as you just said, especially in the perimenopause, menopause time frame. And I want to remind you that we're talking with Dr. Jen Landa. She's the chief medical officer of BodyLogic MD. And I think you would all agree that her title or her moniker of the Sexpert MD is definitely well-deserved. And are there any points that you want to conclude with or point out or give us your website and how people can contact you?
Sure, absolutely. People can contact me at jenlandamd.com. And at Jen, that's JenLandamd.com. And at JenLandamd.com, they can get their free video series. So I have a series of three videos for them, which teach them my 11 passion practices over the course of three different videos that they can view. And it has lots of great downloads that can be helpful to them as well, different tools, quizzes, yoga positions, and all kinds of great things that can be helpful to help them on their journey back to a great sex life.
And it sounds like if they make the journey back to a great sex life, they will have also made the journey back to a great life, because you will have given them the foundation and the framework to not only improve their intimacy, but also their interactions with the world around them, and that's their partners, their families, their business associates, and all the people that they come in contact with. So that's remarkably great information. So I want to thank you very much for spending time talking with us. Again, we've been talking with Dr. Jen Landa, the Chief Medical Officer of BodyLogic MD and the Sexpert MD. I'm your host, Dr. Maish Seibel. You can hear more of my content information on drseibel.com, drseibel.com. And remember, everyone, it's better to stay well than to get well. So stay well, everyone.